Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2017 Home Education Conference, held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
We are so glad that you are here today. I'm not sure how loud I have to talk. My name is Louisa Wells, and I have 7 children, ranging from 1 up to 14. And they've all been homeschooled their whole existence, so I'm really passionate about homeschooling, and I'm so glad that you've taken the time to come today, and I hope that I can say something that will help you move along in your path. In 2002, shortly before my oldest daughter was born, I took a new position at a consulting firm in Washington, D.C. It was well known, and the consulting world, to me, was exactly like it is on television. I would fly to New York in the morning and visit with clients and eat lunch at a swanky restaurant and, of course, on the company's expense, and then fly home in the evening, and it was so fantastic and exciting and thrilling, and, you know, everything was, you know, fashion, down to the shoes, was very important to everyone. When our sweet little Ruthann was born, my boss offered to let me work part-time from home, which seemed like a really good option. Most of my work, other than client meetings, could be done from home, so that was no problem. The catch was that I had to attend a staff meeting once a week down at the office downtown. So I asked a gal from our ward to watch my daughter during that 4 to 6 hour stretch. One day when I came back from my staff meeting, this wonderful woman said to me, "Guess what Ruthann did today?" And she told me some new skill. I can't even remember now what it was, rolling over or sitting up or something. And on my face I said, "That is such great news. I am so excited." And I had a cheerful voice and a cheerful face, but inside I was crushed. How could something so important as my baby's first, whatever it was, happen at somebody else's house? She's not supposed to see their firsts. I'm supposed to see every first. I was outraged. You know, now after 6 kids later and 14 years, I haven't seen everybody's first everything, obviously. But I have seen a lot of them. And I have been the one to release a child on a 2-wheel bike down the street and squeal as they do it and they make it. I've been there for their first words and their first steps and their first falls and broken bones. I'm the one who holds them tight, and I'm the cheerleader when algebra is finally working. I have been there for all of those moments. And you know, my children probably would have and could have done all those things in a daycare or a public school with somebody else. But I am different because I got to be there for all of those special moments in their life. As I put the finishing touches on this presentation last week, I tried to look through all my pictures and find one picture that really captivated what homeschooling looks like for all of you newcomers. And I looked through hundreds of pictures of field trips and nature study and cool science experiments we've done, everything. But you know, when it all boils down to it, all of those things were really just moments. They were moments that I spent with my children, moments that they spent together, moments that were fleeting and sometimes fabulous, but mostly they were meaningful moments simply because we spent them together. You see, to me, homeschooling is mostly about home. It is a lifestyle. It is a way of life where we embrace being all together all the time. By choosing to take control of our children's education, we have really chosen to place ourselves squarely in their lives in an era where families are split and children are products produced by professionals. Today, I would like to share with you some insights about how to live the lifestyle of homeschooling. It is a matter of living in a way that gives room for academic growth and learning in an environment where we are all together pretty much all the time. In giving me this assignment, the conference committee specifically asked that I address the unique challenges that homeschooling presents when you have a large family. For me, the biggest challenge of having multiple age children of all ages is simply managing the complexity of trying to meet so many people's needs simultaneously. I hope that what I have to say today will help you, even if you have just one child, though. Because after all, one child and 2 parents, you're still at 3 competing needs all the time. So I want to start by sharing an analogy, and I need a volunteer to come up. Is there anybody brave enough to come up here and be my volunteer? Okay, then come on up. Yeah, come on up. And this is going to be fun and exciting. Is this really echoey? It seems sort of echoey to me. It's okay? All right. What's your name?
Henrika.
Henrika, okay. So I have in this lovely basket a whole bunch of tennis balls, and they are labeled with some of the important things that you need to do each day. And we'll put this basket right here, and Henrika, I'm going to throw the ball to Henrika, and she has to catch it and set it in the basket, okay? Yeah, so you don't have to shoot. Yeah, okay. Okay, so this ball says exercise, so... Okay, good. Oh, she caught it. She got it in. Good. All right. Marriage. Really important. We have good marriage, right? School. Very important. Okay. Food and clothes. Yeah, times 7 children. That one is a doozy. I'm telling you. It is a doozy. Okay. Calling. Church calling. Okay. There you go. All right. Oh, she did it successfully. Every single ball. Okay. Let's take her game up just a level here. Okay. Now what we're going to do is... We're going to give the... Okay, you have the basket again, and I'm going to take these balls, and I'm going to throw all of them to Henrika at one time. And she's going to catch them all and put them in the basket. Okay, ready? Oh! She didn't catch any of them. Shoot! Well, obviously, when you're trying to catch one ball... Thank you. It's really no problem. You can easily catch one. Oh, you're good. Thank you so much, Henrika. It's pretty easy to catch one ball at a time and put it in the basket, right? That's no problem for any of us. But when you try to catch 5 balls, it is beyond our eye-hand coordination. You cannot catch all 5 balls at one time. And it's like that on purpose. Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ made us with 2 hands. If they had wanted us to catch 5 balls, we would have been born octopuses. We would have 5 hands, but we do not. We are human with only 2 hands. And so... You know, just like this analogy, there are so many demands on our time and energy as homeschool moms. And sometimes we feel like we need to be octopuses to get it all done. And we fall into the temptation of thinking that we have to do them all at once. And then we end up getting scrambled and we drop all the balls, or at least most of the balls, and we feel like failures, right? Well, oftentimes this occurs even in the first few weeks of school, and by October, people feel crazy, and by December, they are done, and they put their kids back in school. On the other hand, if you just catch one ball at a time, you can put that in the basket, right? You can do it. But how do you know which ball to catch first? Especially if you're working with different needs of children of various ages, or with a lot of children, or with a child with special needs, or how do you fit in your own needs among all of theirs, right? That's really complex. How do you take care of your marriage while you're trying to homeschool and be the mom and run the household? How do you do that? Over the years, I have developed a mental process for organizing the balls or priorities in our life to help you know which ones to catch first. I use this process every year, every semester, when I plan out our family's homeschool, and I go back to it any time that we sort of crash. Get off the rails, so to speak. It's not fancy, but it works for me, and maybe it will help you as you embark on this fantastic homeschool adventure. I call it Life Layers, and you have a copy on your handout, page 35. If you want to follow along, you can fill in. Yours is blank, so you can fill it in as we go. Okay, so here's the basic overview. There are 4 layers. You start at the bottom, and you build your way up. And we're going to talk about each layer today. But the most important thing to know is that you do not go on to layer 2 until you have finished the first layer. And most of the layers require forming a habit of success. Now, they say it takes 3 weeks to build a habit, and so I usually plan on 3 weeks for each layer. This is really important that you know that from the beginning, because you want to give yourself a realistic amount of time to implement change. When we expect instant changes from ourselves or our children, we are usually sorely disappointed. On the other hand, if we give ourselves an unlimited amount of time to accomplish something, then we don't get that done either, because we're kind of not in a hurry. So just, you know, I'll get to it sometime, whenever. And we don't end up getting it done. So having a time frame gives us sort of a mix between those. Rather than hurry to get through the end, or if and you don't, you know, you don't get stuck on the layer. So we're going to talk about each layer specifically. Okay, so the first layer is family scriptures and prayers. Now, we all know that our church leaders have asked us to read the scriptures to our children, even if they are very young. For example, Howard W. Hunter said, "Families are greatly blessed when wise fathers and mothers bring their children about them, read from the pages of the scriptural library together, and then discuss freely the beautiful stories and thoughts according to the understanding of all." We've also been told to have family prayers. President Hinckley told us, "Parents, safeguard your families. Pray together. There is no substitute for family prayer when all kneel together before the Lord." Now, we all know this counsel from our priesthood leaders, and you may be wondering why this is the first layer in a homeschool class. Well, I will tell you. Although I'm sure by looking around the room that you are all very competent women and men, the truth is you cannot homeschool without divine help. The sooner you come to terms with that fact, the better. The sooner you accept the fact that you are in over your head and look to the Lord for strength, the better off you will be. For every family on the earth, family scriptures will look different. Maybe you do it in the morning, maybe at the end of dinner. Maybe you read from the picture scriptures because your children are young. Maybe you follow the seminary schedule to stay up with your teen. It doesn't really matter as long as you do it. There are a lot of suggestions on LDS.org that can help you develop a plan that meets your family's needs and interests if your family needs to game up in this level. And whenever you do, whenever you have your scriptures, go ahead and knock out one of your family prayers for the day. That makes it really easy. For our family, simplicity seems to be the key. At some times in our lives, I've come up with some complex study program to increase rigor in our scripture study, and they usually seem to be short-lived. The ideas that we are able to maintain longer are the ones that are very simple, not very time-consuming. Usually I don't plan a lesson ahead. Usually I put a bookmark in and turn the page. That's the extent of the lesson planning, and we just go through some book, whatever it's going to be. I've also found that starting with a song to bring the Spirit in really does seem to help. Lately, our family has been singing. We usually pick one song and sing it till we know it and then do another song. And we recently have been doing How Firm a Foundation, which has 7 verses, only 3 of which we sing at church. By the end of 7 verses, pretty much everyone has figured out that I'm serious about this, and they're sitting pretty still. And they almost all of them can sing all the verses now. Well, everyone probably likes 6 and up. As a child growing up, my family always had scriptures in the morning before my dad went to work. This included every day of summer vacation. We never got to sleep in because Dad had to go to work. Every morning, my dad would come around. Oh, when I was a teenager, we would have scriptures before early morning seminary. And every morning, my dad would come around and he would wake us up. Then he would go into the kitchen and do his personal study. And when we finally dragged ourselves out of bed and got up there, he would put his book aside and we would do family scriptures. We would start with a hymn, and we would start at the beginning of the hymn book, and we would sight read our way through. And the ones that we kind of knew, we didn't have a piano in the room, so you know, the ones we kind of knew sounded better, and the rest of them sounded terrible, but we just kept going through as best we could. Then my dad would read to us straight from whatever book of scripture we were studying, and he would comment sometimes, but he didn't follow a curriculum of any kind or rely on institute manuals or anything like that. By the time we were done reading, my mom would have made us a hot breakfast and a stack of sandwiches. We would kneel in family prayer, then snarf our breakfast and pack a hasty brown bag for lunch and run out the door to seminary. I don't remember if we ever finished the hymn book. I do remember that we finished the Book of Mormon multiple times. I remember reading the Bible. I remember thinking that the whole event was pointless because I was too tired and sadly too disinterested to even learn anything anyway. I don't know if I learned any gospel truths. I suppose I must have. But this one thing I learned for sure. My father knows and loves the scriptures. He loved me enough to get out of bed psychotically early and drag 4 teenagers out of bed. I also know that my mom loves the scriptures. She loved me enough to make a hot breakfast every morning before 6 a.m., despite the fact that she was either nursing, pregnant, or both through all of those years. My dear sisters and brothers, our children need to know our testimonies of our Savior Jesus Christ. It is not the last piece of their education, but the first. They need to confront the fact every single day that in order to know the strength and depth of our beliefs, your children may appear that they dislike family scriptures. You may put up with eye rolling and complaining. However, I promise you, they will draw strength from your example throughout their lives. They will look back on your efforts for years and years to come. Even if they don't remember a single lesson you taught, they will know the profound truth that they are loved by a God in heaven and a parent on this earth. And those two truths will be the foundation of their entire lives. Now, I want to emphasize, in case anyone latches on to the wrong details here, that I do not think a hot breakfast has to be part of the equation. Lots of people successfully have scriptures at night or any other time of the day, and not at mealtime, and plenty of good scripture readers eat cold cereal. The point here is that you do scriptures. As far as your life layers go, I want to point out that layer one comes before layer two, and layer two has food. So this does not mean that you do not, that you fast for 3 weeks because you're getting your scriptures in place, right? But instead, you go down to the simplest meals possible. You eat frozen lasagna for 3 weeks, you get takeout, whatever it is, and you declare yourself successful at the end of the day if you had family scriptures. The rest is gravy. Your house can be a bomb. It does not matter if you had family scriptures. Get that habit established. Set that down as your first layer. And then you'll get this habit and you'll be able to stick to it. I'm going to be honest here. I usually bribe my children during these 3 weeks. I give everyone in their chair fruit snacks if they are on time for scriptures. Or the person who reminds me about it gets screen time, something, so that they help me get the momentum of getting 3 weeks. And hopefully by the end of 3 weeks, we have a pretty solid habit of whatever we're going to do. And for that time frame or semester. And our program changes, our time changes, our schedule changes, what we're reading changes, but we always have scriptures. And the key is that making that a life habit every single day will build the success of your homeschool, starting right there. Now, the second layer is food, exercise, sleep, and mom. To have a healthy homeschool, your family needs to have good health. In fact, sometimes people say if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. We cannot feed our children lots of processed food, permit them to get insufficient sleep or insufficient exercise, and then expect their brains to function properly and perform at full capacity. It just won't work. Elder Kleben Gott, I hope I said his name right, said this. He said, "Take responsibility for your physical well-being. Your soul consists of your body and spirit. Feeding the spirit while neglecting the body, which is also a temple, usually leads to spiritual dissonance and lowered self-esteem. If you are out of shape, if you are uncomfortable in your own body and can do something about it, then do it. Please use good judgment in what and especially how much you eat, and regularly give your body the exercise it needs and deserves. If you are physically able, decide today to be the master of your own house and begin a regular long-term exercise program suited to your abilities combined with a healthier diet." Now, if you had to go to the bare minimum of food to get your layer one in place, this is where you ramp it back up to a healthy Word of Wisdom diet. If you have slacked on exercise for whatever reason, both you and your children, this is where you put it back in. If you're not getting an adequate night's sleep, this is where you change your biorhythms. This layer usually always takes 3 weeks because there can be so many changes when you start messing with people's sleeping and food. For our family, if our health has gotten slack, our screen time consumption has usually skyrocketed. So a lot of times when we enter this layer, I have to have a full screen shut off for at least a week. Sometimes I do this with an announcement to my children and tell them there will be no screens. And other times I just decide that there's no screens. And when they ask, I just say no. For that, I tell myself it's going to be a week and I just say no every time. I want to emphasize two things here. Number one, healthy food, sufficient sleep, and enough exercise here. I'll include mom and dad. If your family is emphasizing school or kids' activities at the expense to the physical health of the parents, this is the time to fix that. Every human being is entitled to good food, exercise, and sleep. Second, getting layer two in place does not mean getting to a point of perfection or weight loss or a major dietary change before moving on. It means setting a habit of daily exercise and regular time devoted to healthy eating. Put those chunks of time into your schedule from the beginning. Sometimes we homeschoolers get our school curriculum all organized and we overbuy, overplan, and overcommit, and then we realize that we're not taking care of our bodies. We have to do things in the proper order. When healthy habits are established, then you can move on to the next layer. But you don't have to achieve all these goals before you move on. The point is to get a good habit going. When my kids were younger, getting exercise meant that I needed a daycare and a gym membership to make this happen. It took us 2 hours every day to find everybody's shoes and get in the car and go to the gym and get in the daycare and go exercise and then come back and get everybody's shoes and get back out. And I would complain to my husband that by the time we'd get home, it's lunchtime and nap time, and we have wasted the best hours of homeschooling. And my husband, who always likes gallows humor, would always say to me, well, if the teacher dies, then the school is going to be in bad shape. So we would just keep doing it. And now that my kids are older, we don't necessarily have to do it like that. Now the older kids watch the younger kids while I exercise at home. But the point is having that habit of exercise to keep mom healthy. Now, does this mean that we have perfect bodies or that we eat fabulous homemade from scratch meals every night? Well, I wish, but it doesn't. Does it mean we get 8 hours solid sleep every night? Definitely not. But we have a consistent habit of caring for our bodies. This really paid off for my oldest daughter last summer when the young men and young women went on a really difficult hike. And she was able to keep up or pass every person on the trail. And one of the adults was really impressed by her physicality and mentioned it to her. And she just blew it off and described her current PE program that she was doing, running or something. And he was really impressed that she was keeping up that kind of a physical program with no public school PE class and no sports coach. She was just doing that on her own. Well, when that girl graduates and becomes an adult, she is going to have a life habit that is going to serve her so well throughout her adult years, and that all started right here in layer two. It's pretty cool, if you ask me, for her to be able to do that. Now, the final piece of this layer is mom, taking care of mom. I actually think this one piece might be the very most important one in the whole pyramid, despite the fact that it's kind of wedged in here like a sort of subpart of layer two. And what I mean here is finding a way and a time and a place for mom to refuel and recharge. And there are really three components of this. We're going to talk about each one. Daily spiritual self-care, mom's night out or morning out if you want to do it like that, and date night. So first, spiritual self-care. For our daily spiritual self-care, we need to go to the living waters of Jesus Christ and drink deeply. That's right, more scriptures and prayer. Personal, quiet time. Or even mostly quiet time, right, in a family, where we can turn to the Lord and gain strength from Him daily. What this looks like so much depends on our season of life. When my children were younger, it meant reading the scriptures while rocking a baby. Smartphones have sure made that habit easier when I first started having kids. I always have the scriptures in my pocket. If I sit down in a rocking chair, my scriptures can come out. Now, for moms whose kids are in seminary, maybe that's early morning quiet time in the car parked outside the church. Right now, I'm juggling toddlers to teens. It's a really busy phase. So I read my scriptures while I ride my bike in the garage. It's the best. Sweaty and spiritual all in 1 hour. It's really great. It's the best time of my day. But regardless of your season of life, I promise you there is a way to find time for yourself to do this every single day. And while you're working on layer two is the time to figure out when and how you want to make that work for you. Do you want to get up early? Do you want to read before bed? Do you want to take a break at lunch? The best time is the time that you will stick with. For me, I prefer morning time. I like to start my day with the reminder that there is a plan bigger than me and bigger than my children. I need to remember that God's plan for my children includes all the problems that we'll face that day and that it is through His Spirit that they will learn and grow. I need the inspired answers to the day's questions right out of the gates. The second component to taking care of mom is mom's night out. When I discuss this idea with friends, a lot of them point to their opportunities to exercise and they count that. I want to emphasize that this needs to be on top of exercise. You all get to exercise because you are alive. Mom's night out is on top of that. Moms are people too. In addition to exercise and showers, moms have to refuel and recharge away from their kids. So hire a babysitter or find a time when dad can solo parent, but make sure it's a regular thing. Over the years, I have found that if we as a family fall short on protecting mom's night out, we very quickly slip into a place of emotional dysfunction that submarines our entire family. On the other hand, when we take care of mom, it is the gift that keeps on giving. Charity flows from a full cup. When mom has a full cup, she passes that on to everyone in the family. It is worth the effort it takes to get something picked out and off the ground. It is worth the sometimes painful self-contemplation of asking what you like to do with your time when it's been so long since you had any time to do anything with that you can't remember what you like to do. it takes some time. And if it's been a long time since you did something, you might not even remember. And it's okay for it to be a bomb the first time. That's okay. Start somewhere. Do something. If you don't like that thing, switch to something new and keep a habit of giving mom some time and space. I have done a lot of things over the years for this. Yoga, basketball, soccer, painting, drawing, lots of retail therapy, family history, dining with friends. It can be anything. This past January, I realized that we had fallen off the wagon on this habit, and I was starting to feel a little crazy inside. And so I really wanted to take a drawing class, but I couldn't find any that fit my schedule, except one called Zentangle. And I had no idea what that was, but I didn't care because I was desperate to get out of the house. And it turned out it's doodling with meditative breathing. And they use 4-inch square pieces of paper, which is exactly the amount of paper I can accomplish an art project on. So I feel great success when I finish, and here's a picture of my fine artwork. But you know what? It turns out to actually be really soothing, and I do it before bed almost every night now, and it's really fabulous way for me to unwind, which I also have always needed, and I just found it because I was so desperate for mom's night out. The third thing we have to take care of is mom's date night. It is super important that we homeschool moms come out of the trenches and let our husbands know how much we adore them. It is tempting to talk about your work and or his work and your school day, and it's so critical to talk about parenting issues and schedule conflicts. In our modern busy world, we really have to take time, choose to take time, to keep our marriage strong. I'm going to talk more about this in my class tomorrow, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but I want to emphasize how important a solid marriage is to mom's self-care. A lot of our homeschooling happens in such an isolated place, and some days dad is the only adult that we see. So many of the conflicts we have to handle during homeschooling are really parenting and discipline issues, and for those, we have to be on the same page with our husband. If you do not have a solid habit of spending time together, there will not be enough emotional currency to make the necessary withdrawals as time goes on during homeschooling. Sometimes our kids complain about us going on a date night, especially now that they have to babysit each other. There's always drama. I point out to them the value of having a solid family, and I remind them that having parents who are happily married is one of their greatest blessings, and usually that stops the complaining. Now, to some of us moms, taking care of ourselves may seem really selfish at first. Perhaps your own mother did not model this skill at all. Wait, that's what my mom did. Now, we were all in public school, so she may have done her self-care during the day when we were gone. But if you did not see that modeled, and it seems like a foreign skill to you, that's okay. It takes time to recognize the importance and find the things you want to do. It takes time to learn to communicate your needs to your spouse in a way that helps you solve the childcare piece of it. For me, it's gotten easier over time to keep with this habit because I have begun to notice how I act, how I treat my children when I am getting refreshed regularly compared to when I am not. Now, taking care of our food, exercise, sleep, and mom is a lot for one layer, but they're grouped together because they all take some scheduled Tetris, and it can just be done at once. Figure out when you're going to exercise, when you're going to cook, when your bedtime is going to be, when your kids' bedtimes are going to be, that they're all going to get enough sleep, and find a chunk of time for mom to plan. And plan out a few months' worth of date nights, something that you want to do for a whole quarter, and get that moving. Add those on top of your family scriptures and prayer, and you are on your way to success. Layer 3 is called Fly Lady. It is affectionately named after the cleaning guru whose website is on your handout. You can use any book or website you want as a tool. It does not matter. But the point here is to take care of your home. I like the Fly Lady because she inspires me with her message of you can have a clean house, instead of some other cleaning books make you feel like you should have a clean house, and then I just feel guilty. But regardless of what resource you use, the point here is to make sure your house gets clean enough on a consistent basis given the ages of the children you currently have. So that's a different look of clean when your children are 5 and under than when your children are teenagers. There should be a difference, right? Now, the Fly Lady has an acronym for a home that is out of control in terms of cleanliness. She calls it chaos, can't have anyone over syndrome. If your home is in chaos, this is the time to get it in order. I'm not talking about better homes and garden order. I'm talking about clean enough most of the time. That's another one of her catchy sayings. When my kids were young and I first started reading her website, she made one point that really hit home with me. She said, our morning routines can change our lives. We all have morning routines that we do with our time in housekeeping, but some of them might be subconscious. And taking conscious look at those morning routines empowers us to make them more beneficial to our families. At that time, and here's some brutal honesty, my morning routine was to get up and do the dinner dishes that were in the sink from the night before. Every morning I did that, and I would put them in the dishwasher and start the dishwasher and feel so good about myself. Well, when I started to look carefully at my morning routine, all I did was switch to unloading the dishwasher by doing the dishes at night, and my housekeeping changed quite a bit with just that simple change. And it was really just that conscious look at what do I do in the morning for my cleaning. And from there, I started training my children on simple chores more consciously. And now that they're older, every time we get to layer three, remember I said that I do this every semester, I evaluate their chores and see if there's someone who's not pulling their load, or there's someone who has too many chores, or there's someone who has mastered all the chores they have and could now game up and learn a new chore. I consider all those things and then switch them if I need to. Now, you are all intelligent, talented women. I know that with a little bit of thought, you can figure out a system that will work for your current household to get things clean enough most of the time. However, sometimes we don't follow through on our good cleaning ideas with enough focus to really make them happen. That's why you have 3 whole weeks to focus on that. And I promise, in that much time, you can get a rhythm going that will bless your family. For us, I have found that a zone method works better than trying to get each person to clean up exactly what they used, especially since the messiest people can't clean up anything at all. Also, rotating the work among the children is one of the blessings of raising a bunch of kids. It seems like there are certain jobs that no one wants to do, and when those jobs are rotated so you only get them some of the time, then people don't complain as frequently. I also have found that if I put this 3-week chunk into my summer, then I don't have to spend as much time during the school year. The chores really just self-perpetuate. And I like to remind my children of the blessings of having a big family when they're complaining about chores and how they don't have to do all the chores. You know, it's your night for dinner dishes. Well, but think about how many meals you ate today and someone else did those dishes. I like to remind them about those things. I also like to communicate to them the vision that I'm trying to give them a gift of being competent adults who can keep their own area clean. And we sometimes like to joke that it's a gift dressed in overalls that looks like work. I'm frequently approached by women whose children are younger than school age but who want to homeschool in a few years' time. They want to know, what should I be doing now to be ready for homeschool? If you are in this position, this is my answer. Start with layer one. Get your family scriptures. Add layer two. Then when you get to layer three, stop, stay here, and work on your chores at a scheduled time each day or week. Clean your house on a certain day. Buy the groceries on a certain day. Do the laundry at a planned time, even if you don't feel like doing laundry that day. Do it on a schedule, because when you get into the higher years of academics, you have to have a schedule, and you have to have your kids accountable to something because you said it's time, not because anybody else is driving that. So give your family the habit of doing things that at the time you plan them, and start building this family discipline from the get-go. If you feel like you have mastered these 3 levels and you really just want some academics, if your children are young, just read to them. It's really just that simple. If they are younger than school age, if they are in kindergarten or first grade, add 1 hour of math and reading learning, and that's it. That's all you have to do. You don't need to make it more complicated than that. If your children are older than that, the rule of thumb is you should have 1 hour a day of academics per school grade, up to about 5, and then that's maybe 6 or 7 if you're counting their PE as one of their subjects. But you don't need to have as many hours as the public school thinks you do. And so you can put the limits on and simplify your life. And when you focus on these first, you will have the family structure that you need to add academics. The last layer is school. By the time you get to this point, you have a solid structure for your family that has family scriptures, physical health, time to care for mom, and a clean house. And inserting school isn't really that difficult at this point, because you've blocked off so much of your time, you only have a few hours a day for school anyway. And the great thing about that is that you don't start planning school like you have 24 hours a day and getting all these fancy things that you don't even have time to use because you have to have time to clean your house. Instead of overcommitting and getting frustrated, you are going to have a manageable plan. As you strive for strong academics, you are going to have the work ethic that makes that possible. When you encourage your children to learn a lot so they can get good jobs and don't have to clean toilets all day, that's going to mean something to them. Moreover, the spiritual strength, physical fitness, and comfort of cleanliness are going to balance their academic work throughout their education. That is a tremendous life skill. Now, I know you are all overachievers or you wouldn't be sitting here, right? Am I right? You want to jump right to the end. You came here for homeschool advice. You are at a homeschool convention. You want to start with school. Don't do it. This is the mistake I see moms make so often. They start homeschooling, they get excited about a certain curriculum or a hands-on project or Latin, they dig right in, their house is a mess, they have no personal time, they skip over family scriptures and prayer, and school doesn't work. Why? Because they built their pyramid of life upside down. They focus so much attention on the top layer, but they didn't build it on a strong foundation. It probably seems like taking 3 weeks per layer will take too long to get started. Believe me, I feel that temptation every year. The key for me is planning on those extra weeks before the school year starts, but I don't necessarily tell my family that's what we're doing. So, and if you're a pro at one of these layers already, then you won't need to spend 3 weeks on that layer. So you can plan on a few shorter number of weeks. So look at your life, figure out how many weeks you're going to need, and back those out before your school year starts. For our family, we usually start fixing our habits a month or more before school starts, and none of my children know that's what I'm doing. I just tell them we're starting to focus on scriptures for 3 weeks, and they don't really mind that much because I haven't introduced academics, and so they just, you know, and they still have quite a bit of free time. No one really seems to care. By the time school actually starts, we have this good structure in place, everyone is feeling good, and we get a really good start on the year. Remember that in public school, all the parents have to do is get their children to the building. So they let them sleep in all summer long, and then on the first day of school, they send them to school, and they change their biology, and they're cranky, but the parents don't have to put up with it. For me, trying to have that physical adjustment and adding academics in is too much. So if I get our scriptures and our health under control, adding academics on the first day of school is actually really fun. Everybody really enjoys the first day. Also, you can consolidate the layers a little bit if you need to. For instance, our family has a really good habit of scripture study, so we don't usually have to hit level one for a full 3 weeks. But every year we go to Utah, and when we come back, our biology is a mess. So I spend 3 weeks where I tell my kids we're just focusing on scriptures, but getting them up on time for scriptures fixes the biology of it. So when we get to layer two, that doesn't really take us the whole 3 weeks. Do you see what I mean? Anyway, if you don't have 3 extra weeks before school starts to add these layers in, then start school later. It will be fine. I know that we think, I have to do the whole book. It has 36 weeks. That means I have to start it on this day. If I don't start it, my children will die cold and alone. I know, you worry about these things. I know, because I do. And I promise you, it will be better if you just start later. Some years, I give in to the temptation to start when we're not quite ready. And we haven't done these things, but I'm like, school is so important, and our co-ops are starting, and so we got to start. And I do it, and then inevitably during the year, it causes a catastrophe. We have to break down, and we have to stop mid-year and fix these things, and it would have been better to just get it right the first time. Periodically, you are going to find that your family gets thrown off, and something is out of whack. In the 9 years that I have been homeschooling, we have had a major change or catastrophe every year. In the early years, that would sink my boat. Now, I just go back to my pyramid, and I start again, and I say, what's wrong? Are family scriptures working? Do we need better food and exercise? And then I go back, and I climb back up to the top. I like to think of the analogy of a professional violinist who, like a beginner, still sometimes hits wrong notes. But the professional hears that tone and quickly fixes it much faster than a beginner does. And over time, that's where you get your speed and become a professional homeschooler, is because you can get back up on the wagon faster. And this is the key to mentally doing it one ball at a time instead of trying to catch all the balls. Now, I want to give you some specific tools for helping with the schooling layer of this. These are things that help me a lot, and I'm kind of doing my handout backwards, so we're going to go to the managing logistics on the second page, the bottom half. Okay, so the first thing is high-tech tools, calendars, and computer subjects. So I tried to have a paper calendar for a lot of years. I liked it better. And then I switched to a digital, and I found something. This is like the number one key for moms with big families. So, of course, you all know you can have yourself a digital calendar like this, right? It has everywhere that I need to be for the week. But you can also have a different calendar for school. So here's my school calendar. And then you go over and you select... This on this screen, you can select which calendars you want to see, and it will let you layer them together. So now I can put my school and my out-of-the-house commitments on the same page, and I can look. Did I just plan school at a time when we have violin lesson? Well, that won't work. I also have a calendar for meals. I can put my meals up and make sure that I didn't plan to start the crock pot at the same time that I plan to be somewhere. And I can also have a layer for my kids, and I can have a layer for my husband, and I can have a layer for chores that I'm going to do. For instance, or supervising chores that I need to help somebody with. And I can put, if I want to, I can put all those layers up at the same time, and I can see the complexity that's so overwhelming in my head, and I can see why it's overwhelming, because it looks crazy on paper. But better than that is that I can focus on just the things I need to. So when I need to plan school, I look at the school layer. Sometimes I need to know how that interacts with my places I need to go. Other times, I don't need to know that, so I don't want to see that, because then my mind goes into the rabbit trails of, oh yes, I remember now I need to do that. Sometimes I need to look at my meals, but I don't want to know whose math lessons I haven't planned out for next week, because I'll just go into a rabbit trail. So I can turn off what I need off and turn on what I need on, and occasionally, I find that I get something that I don't like at all, and then I just can delete the whole calendar and start fresh, and that's such a good feeling. Now, I will caution you, if you start to use a digital calendar for homeschool, that it becomes really easy to let it become the master and you become the slave. So use it as a tool, and when you feel like you have control of it, then don't use it anymore. But if you start to feel like, ooh, I better write that down on my schedule because now I just changed what I had planned, then it's the master, and put it aside. You have to be the master, and with digital, it's a little, the paper calendar never did that to me. It never became the master, but the digital one does. The other technology that I use is computer subjects. Every single child in my home, including my 5-year-old and my 3-year-old, have subjects they do on the computer. And this helps a lot because they feel independent and they can do things, but that doesn't take up much of my time. My suggestion is to pick things that you are not going to grade. That doesn't mean you're not going to care about them. It does not mean that they are that you're going to be unsafe with the internet, but it means that you don't have to invest as much. So typing, or my younger kids do personal scriptures on the computer, and they think that's the best thing ever, but I don't care how many stories they read. I'm not grading that. Or choose something digital that grades itself and sends you a report. Those are really handy. Okay, the next thing is the low-tech list, checklists. Now, the best thing for managing kids being independent is to have some way that they know when they're done with school. It's non-emotive. So when they come to me and say, I'm done with school, I don't have to say, oh, what did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? We just both look at the same piece of paper. And I've done everything, every different form. And what I have found I like the best, I got from Sarah McKenzie on the Read Aloud Revival, her address is on your handout, is to use a spiral notebook. And I write their checklist on the front page. And on the back page, I write books they've read. So we're keeping a list of books they've read. And I do the checklist for a week. And then the next week, if I have time, I write the checklist again. And if I don't have time, I make them write it. And then in 4 weeks, when I get back to having time to do it myself, I can look back at what my original plans were and keep track of that one child. That's the best thing I've tried. One-on-one time is possible, even with a lot of children. This takes great effort. It has to really be a priority. But I know we all know that one-on-one time is important. We have found that we like to do one-on-one time reading at night with our children. Doing something when dad is home really helps to fit that in. But it is possible even with a large family. Another time we have one-on-one time is mentor meetings. When your children are 12 and older, then you want to start checking in with them maybe like once a week with their school instead of every day. And we just call these a mentor meeting. And I usually state to my children how long the meeting will be when it starts. I tell them, let's have a 15-minute mentor meeting. And then they don't go, oh, meeting. They think, oh, 15 minutes. Okay, I can do that. Another thing for managing logistics is to have whole family curriculums and themes or unit studies. In the early years, I would say up through middle school, your family can do history and science all together. After that, they sort of have to split science. But history, you can do. I haven't found anything good for science, but history they can do all the way up together. Another thing, okay, that I got from the public school, actually, is stations and rotations. In the first grade in public school, the kids go to stations around the room, right? So with a bunch of kids, if you just tell them where their station is and when they need to rotate, then they can do it. And they like that feeling of independence of going to the next station. And it becomes a cue to just say, everyone go to first station, and they go. And then they know, it helps them know what to do instead of asking them, well, are you doing your schoolwork? Well, what station are you supposed to be at? I'm kind of running out of time, so I'm just going to say that field trips are fun for everyone, and you should do lots of field trips. And that you can teach your values through content and devotionals. This is why I keep science and history together as much as I can, because in those subjects, I have the opportunity to teach my children my values in the course of teaching them. So the more you can do that, that's why we have them at home, so that we can teach them our own values. And make sure you have a devotional every day. Now, we're going to go on to the beginner's pitfall section at the top of the page. But have you ever had a kid who was totally inconsolable about something, and then they ate lunch, and then they were fine? And you were like, oh, you were just hungry. And even while they were having their temper tantrum, and you're going 11:45 temper tantrum, you can tell that that's what's going on, right? So these things in this section are some things that are outside of your control. And sometimes I see beginners get really messed up by these things. And as a more experienced homeschooler, I can look at them and say, this is an external problem. You just need to eat. Or, you know, and so I'm going to tell you these. So then during the next school year, when this happens to you, you're going to hear my voice saying, well, you might just need to eat because it's just, okay. So the first one is October, January, and February. We all know that January and February are gloomy months. But October is what my husband calls the January of the fall. In September, we all start out at crazy awesome speed, and we're going so great. And then in October, we go, okay, this isn't working, and I can't keep this speed up any longer. And so we all panic, and everybody's feeling it. Everybody you know, the public school moms, the public school teachers, and all of us are all feeling it. So in October, when you start feeling crazy, please hear my voice saying, it's not you. It's just that it's October. Those are just hard months, and sometimes you just have to say, just making it through, just making it through. Another really key pitfall that I see beginners make is starting too fast. Experienced homeschool families often start one subject or two subjects at a time and then gradually add in all the subjects. Beginners have in their mind this public school mentality that you show up on the first day and you have a syllabus in all your classes and you start working everything all at once, but they forget that those, especially in the middle school and high school classes, have 7 teachers providing that, as well as a janitor, custodian, and a principal, and a lunch lady, and a whole administrative staff. And you don't have those things. And so you might need to slow down your speed. I'd like to offer the analogy of a runner. When you go out running, and you sometimes get started, and you think you have your pace, and then sometimes you think, ooh, actually, that pace is too fast. Do you stop? No, you don't. You just slow down and find a slower pace. And maybe after a minute, that slower pace feels too slow, and so you pick it back up again. The same thing is true with homeschooling. It's okay to slow back down if you realize you started too fast. It will be fine. There are so many hours in the year you can pick your pace back up. It takes a little time. The next pitfall is recreating public school. This is pretty self-explanatory. That public schools' methods are not necessarily the best, their curriculum ideas are not necessarily the best, the order they do things is not necessarily the best. But sometimes, because we know nothing different, when we start, we recreate that at home. And if you find yourself doing that and you don't like what you're doing, please hear my voice saying, You might be recreating public school, and you don't have to. Find something that you like. Especially if you are doing that, you might also do the next one, which is spending too much money up front. You have my permission to waste a lot of money while you homeschool because you started with something and you didn't like it. And then you realize you didn't like it and you think, oh gosh, I gotta keep using this because I already paid for this. Guess what? That money is gone. Let it go. Start again. Now you have zero money, fine, pick something free. But don't keep yourself tied to something that isn't working for you because you spent your money up front. It's okay. Give yourself permission to make this mistake. It will be okay even in high school. Make sure that you are doing things that you like. All of your children and all of their subjects, you might not always be the teacher, but keep yourself as the teacher of the things that you enjoy. And outsource the ones that you do not like to teach. Get something that's a little less teacher intensive if you don't like it, because your enthusiasm will be contagious, as will your disinterest. I know we all want to finish every book that we start, but I found myself this year reading a read aloud to my children that I just really wasn't enjoying. And I kept thinking, but I want them to know we finished things. But I hate this book, but I want them to know we finished things. So guess what I did? When the babysitter came over, I had her read it to them, and they finished it, and I was so glad. It was really nice. Okay, the next pitfall is mistaking parenting problems at school as school problems. This is a problem that I see all the time, especially with parents who have a strong-willed child. And that child is disobedient or disrespectful. And the parent thinks, I can't handle this child. I need to put them in school where a professional can help them. And disobedience or disrespect or something like this is not a homeschool issue. It is a parenting issue. And that is an issue that, as a parent, you still need to have ownership of. So on your handout, I've referred one of my very favorite parenting books to you, called Between Parent and Child. And it's a fabulous book. But you need to take ownership of that and not consider it a homeschool issue and put your kids back in school because you can't solve the disobedience and disrespect. You have to find a way to solve that because you are their parent. When I was very first homeschooling, I one time went swimming at a homeschool event, and I hung out in the pool with this lady who had been homeschooling for many, many years. And I can't remember now if my kids were 1, 3, and 5, or 0, 2, 4, and 6. I can't remember, but they were all little. And so now my concern, looking back now with all these teenagers, it kind of makes me laugh, but I remember saying to her, I just don't feel like I can do enough for my children. And I'm just worried that I should put them in school because I can't be enough or do enough for them. And she told me something that has stuck with me and has really helped me over the years. And she said, feeling like you're not doing enough is a parenting problem, not a homeschool problem. Every parent feels that, no matter what school their children are in. So when you get home and you feel, I don't do enough for my children, this isn't good enough, our school isn't good enough, they're not going to succeed enough, that is a parenting problem. It is not a homeschool problem. You are going to have to come to terms with that as a parent, and it won't help to put them back in school. You will still feel like a failure if you think you are not enough. Now, President Monson has said, sometimes, my dear sisters, you feel inadequate and ineffective because you can't do all that you feel you should. Rather than continually dwelling on what still needs to be done, pause occasionally and reflect on all that you do and have done. It is most significant. The good you have done, the kind words you have spoken, the love you have shown to others can never be fully measured. That's President Monson. In conclusion, I want to encourage each of you by telling you in no uncertain terms that you can homeschool your children. Whatever talents you have, whatever your best efforts look like, it will be enough. Our Father in Heaven sent your children to you because He had a plan and a reason. He has a plan for each of them that requires the very type of love and parenting that He has prepared you to offer them. In addition, He has a plan for you to become something incredible and spectacular simply by serving your children in your home. And the best part about it is that His plan for them and His plan for you will be accomplished simultaneously in a series of moments meaningful moments that will happen one at a time, day at a time, as your family lives and learns all together. Thank you so much.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.